Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
Good morning, everybody. Brian Lehrer on WNYC, and get ready for 8 action-packed days in Albany. And if that sounds like an oxymoron in the sleepy state capital, you haven't been looking at the calendar or the docket.
This is a matter of fairness and equality. It is not a question of religion or culture.
Demand on the state, on the local legislators, will be fill our school districts' coffers.
We talk about cleaning up Albany. This bill is actually going to do it. It is unprecedented disclosure.
He's saying to the lowest paid people in public employment that you will now have to pay twice as much as you're currently contributing. You will have to work longer and you will get less benefit.
So we heard from Governor Cuomo twice, Sheldon Silver, the Assembly Speaker, once, and there at the end, Union Leader Stephen Medaris. The 2011 term of the New York State Legislature is supposed to end 1 week from today, Monday, June 20th. Between now and then, we could see any or all of the following things happen. A property tax cap, much in demand by beleaguered suburban homeowners, but much dreaded by teachers and school districts. More stability for New York City's rent-stabilized apartments, possibly tied to the property tax cap. Ethics reform, which the governor referred to there, either token or real, in a state where the only thing worse than corrupt politicians is the laws that make corruption legal. Redistricting rules that could be partisan or nonpartisan and leave Anthony Weiner without a seat even if he doesn't resign. Pension reform, including raising the retirement age for future state and local workers, and an end to working massive overtime in your last year on the job to puff up your pension forever. A weaker or stronger version of President Obama's health insurance exchange for the state's uninsured. Bills to regulate fracking, texting, and ultimate fighting. And as the New York Times pointed out in its headcount article today, there are 8 days and 8 state senators between here and legal same-sex marriage. And I'm sure we're leaving things out. So here with much more knowledge of Crunch Week in Albany are Liz Benjamin, host of Capital Tonight on the Upstate YNN Cable News Network, and Ken Lovett, the Daily News Albany Bureau Chief. Hi, Ken. Hi, Liz.
Hi, Brian.
And Ken Lovett, let's begin with same-sex marriage. Word was over the weekend that the 3 Democratic senators out of the 8 undecideds could declare support today. Do you know yet if that's happening?
Well, we're hearing there maybe at least 2 and possibly the 3rd. Those are Shirley Huntley and Carl Krueger. And we don't know yet, but that's a big step toward it because the Republicans have been withholding votes in large part because they couldn't get the 6 needed to push it over the edge. If this would bring it to 28 or 29, it leaves 3 to go on the Republican side.
And Liz, how do the Democrat swing voters coming to the yes side influence the Republicans if they do?
Well, the real issue is that I don't think any of the Republicans want to be the deciding factor vote. I mean, someone's going to have to be the deciding factor vote, and it's not clearly not going to pass without Republican assistance because there are only 30 Democrats, one of whom is never in a million years going to vote for gay marriage, and that's Senator Ruben Diaz, of course. So really, there's going to be a Republican who's the deciding vote no matter how you slice it, but I think that they would like there to be not 32 but maybe 33 as some sort of cushion, so nobody gets specifically singled out as the person who made gay marriage a reality. And they've been sort of trying, I also think, to buy themselves some time and deflect attention from themselves by saying, well, why are you focused on us so much? Why not focus on those still potentially flippable Democrats? And so, assumedly, that's what the governor did.
Is there a deal to be made, Liz? Republicans, a few of them, giving a yes vote on same-sex marriage in exchange for something else?
You know, there's been a lot of sort of hypotheticals floated out there. One really cynical hypothetical was that there would be a deal, a possibly gettable deal, that the governor would say to the Senate Republicans, look, you know, I'll back off on redistricting reform, you know, in a sort of nudge-nudge, wink-wink kind of a way. And if you guys do this, I don't believe it's gotten to that point, although, you know, there's been some suggestion that it could get there, maybe if he really, really wanted it. But so far, my understanding is when he's meeting with these Republicans, the argument that he's been making is the one that he's been making publicly, which is this is a civil rights issue. It's the way that the state is going, generally speaking, it's the right thing to do. I don't know that horse trading is going on explicitly as of this point, although now would be the time to do it.
Yeah, and Ken, it seems to me that the political risks of voting for same-sex marriage get less and less every year. Generationally, younger voters of both parties tend to be more in favor. Issue-wise, people care deeply now about the economy, less and less about stopping this, while those in favor have a lot of passion for it. The issue is the winning side of history, at least in New York, whether in the next 8 days or not, you think?
I agree with that, except for one point. There is a huge political risk in the name of Michael Long, the chairman of the State Conservative Party, who has threatened that the Conservative Party throughout the state will not back anyone who supports gay marriage.
Endorsement is still key to a lot of Republicans winning in their district, certainly to statewide Republican victories.
Right, and they've often needed both Republican and conservative line votes to help put them ahead. So that is a major deal for a lot of Republicans, because don't forget, the Republicans have the slimmest of slim margins, and they want to keep their majority next year. And they fear that if Long follows through on his threats, then they could lose the majority. So there is a huge political consideration.
This?
Yeah, I just think that there are a couple of things. I mean, I thought Capital, which is a sister publication to City Hall News, had, I believe it was them, had an interesting story, which is to say that Mike Long only has the power to make a decision in terms of an endorsement in districts, and the executive committee, he would say also, in districts where the lines cross counties. So in other words, if you have a district that's wholly contained inside a county, the county leader makes the decision. And there are at least three senators for whom, Republican senators who are maybe on the fence or maybe considered gettable, for whom that's a situation. And, you know, also there are some key conservative leaders like Ralph Lurigo in Erie County who do not agree with Mike Long on this drawing the line in the sand situation on gay marriage. And actually, Ralph Lurigo, who is at odds with Long over the gubernatorial race in Carl Palladino, recently endorsed Assemblyman Schroeder for Buffalo City Comptroller, and Schroeder is a yes on gay marriage, I believe.
Brian Lehrer on WNYC, as we talk about the action-packed last 8 days of the New York State legislative session, all kinds of things on the table. This is when they get all the work done, I guess. You know, it's like the rest of us. We all sit around until we're on deadline, and then we work all night. With Liz Benjamin, host of Capital Tonight on the Upstate YNN Cable News Network, and Ken Lovett, the Daily News Albany Bureau Chief. By the way, Elliot Spitzer will be among our guests tomorrow, the former governor who has a new book, and we'll definitely touch on some of these state issues. Next one, ethics reform, real or token. They're supposed to vote on that today. Here's Assembly Speaker Sheldon Silver on this program 2 weeks ago, endorsing more disclosure of even his own clients from his private law practice.
Well, very clearly, I've had an ethics deal with the governor for 2 months, and I want to point out very clearly, I do no business with the state. I represent no clients with the state. I represent individual claimants in cases involving insurance. And I disclose that on my ethics report, and even though I am not required to. And, I am perfectly comfortable with a requirement that the governor is asking of a full disclosure.
So, Liz Benjamin, I don't know if you want to parse Speaker and Attorney Sheldon Silver's words there, but are they passing ethics reform today, and how much is it about him?
Well, the Senate is indeed passing, or scheduled to, I should say. It's never over until it's over in Albany, but to pass ethics reform today. I think the issue here is that the so-called Rainmaker Clause didn't make it in, if I'm not mistaken. Ken, am I right about that?
Right.
Meaning?
So the Rainmaker Clause, that's basically something that was on the table at one point, and I think that lawmakers balked about it. It is to say a person like the Speaker or Dean Skelos, the Senate Majority Leader, who is of counsel at a firm and brings in clients. I mean, look, neither of these guys are going to court and defending somebody in court, generally. I mean, I can't remember the last time I heard that the Speaker was in court or the Majority Leader. So they are the names on the masthead. They bring people in, and they are not specifically representing clients. That's the Rainmaker Clause. Originally, you'd have to disclose any person that your firm actually had on the client list who might have some kind of state business. That's no longer the case.
Well, also, in the case of Sheldon Silver, it's never really believed that he brought in a lot of clients. Look, his law firm is a trial, you know, a trial law firm. They do slip
right.
and fall. What Shelley Silver has been accused of doing is bringing in a big paycheck from Whites in Luxembourg and then doing their bidding, if you listen to his critics. So, for instance, blocking tort reform, which, you know, his house has done for a number of years. Now, for the first time, what we'll be able to see is how much exactly Sheldon Silver gets paid by Whites in Luxembourg.
That's the disclosure.
And then make its own decisions.
And Ken, the lead editorial in your paper, The Daily News Today, and everybody should realize Ken is a reporter in Albany, not an editorial writer, but the editorial says the bill is not tough enough because it would create a 14-member ethics commission, but just two or three votes out of the 14 could protect lawmakers from investigation. Explain how they could vote for something 11-3 on the Ethics Commission and have it fail.
I mean, the easiest explanation is it's Albany, but to go into a little more detail, basically they've given veto power to the legislative leaders and the governor when the eyes turn toward their areas. So, for instance, if there is a complaint against an assembly member, in order to bring an investigation, you have a 14-member panel that you would need at least 8 votes to bring an investigation. But in addition to having the majority of the panel say, yes, let's investigate, you would need 2 members of the same party from the same house that's being investigated to go along with the investigation. And then it's the same with the governor, where 2 of his people, 2 of his appointments would have to sign off on any investigation of the executive branch. So you can get a 12-2 vote to investigate the governor's, you know, the executive branch, and it could go down because the governor's people voted against it. Or you can get an 11-3 vote to investigate the assembly or the Senate, but then the that goes down because the leaders basically had veto power.
This is such, and yeah, that sounds kind of laughable, but this is such a perennial dilemma for Albany, Kent. Everyone seems to agree that deep-pocketed lobbyists, and we haven't really even talked about them yet, have too much influence. That's the legal corruption, and that the leaders of the Assembly and the Senate have too much power over all their members. But Spitzer failed on this issue. Patterson failed on this issue. Now the Daily News says Cuomo and company are passing a bill that's too weak. This is at the heart of money and power and who really rules in a democracy, isn't it?
Yeah.
It absolutely is. And what it is was, it was the legislature, particularly the Senate, protecting its own. The Senate was said to push for a lot of these stipulations. They have a lot of people who are lawyers. They didn't want to disclose all the clients that do business with the state that these law firms represent. I'll give you an example. Last year, there was a debate on the floor whether to put a moratorium on the hydrofracking, which is a gas drilling technique. This guy, George Winner, who's no longer with the Senate now, who is an attorney, got up and passionately spoke in favor of hydrofracking, saying it's the future economic salvation of upstate New York. Well, it turns out that his law firm has a lot of energy clients, and that's something we never knew. It just kind of leaked out, and I did a story on it. But you know, we're under this bill, it's questionable whether we would still know it, because unless the lawmaker himself represents somebody and represents that person before the state, we're not going to know who the clients are.
Brian Lehrer on WNYC with Ken Lovett and Liz Benjamin as we look at the active last 8 days of the legislative session in the New York State Legislature. And here is an issue, not that much in the headlines, but we had the other Liz Benjamin on last week, the healthcare consumer advocate. And
there's only one, you know.
If the state, if everyone else is just an imitation, if the state passes a law in these 8 days that begins to set up a health care exchange for the uninsured under the president's law, the state will be eligible for millions in federal grants. And so here is the other Elizabeth Benjamin on the difference that she sees between the state Senate version of this, more conservative, and a more progressive version from Governor Cuomo.
There's only 6 more days in the legislative session. The Cuomo administration has been, in good faith, meeting with lots of people, other legislative leaders, other stakeholders, saying, here's our draft bill. Let's try to get consensus around it. And the bill is absolutely pro-consumer. It's a great bill. We're really concerned about the Senate bill. You know, New York can do better than just doing a clearinghouse model a la Utah and the New York State Senate. We should have, we should be a leader. New York always has been. We should be out there in front on these exchanges. It should have strong bargaining power, be an active purchaser, and it should be able to standardize the products and offer, and it should be able to regulate the plans it's offering.
So a stronger government version being proposed by the governor as opposed to the Republicans in the Senate. And Liz Benjamin, are you following the issue that your namesake is involved in? Is the governor going to push this week?
Well, I spoke with Kemp Hannan, the Senate Health Committee chairman, on Friday about this issue. It's a pretty complicated issue. And the long and short of it is, if the state, there are two options. One is that you just go with what the federal government does. And the other is that you create your own version, right? So that's what states can do. So the state Senate is pushing this bill that pretty much leaves it, in terms of consumer protection and advocating on consumers' behalf, pretty much leaves it up to the market, which is not something that I think that advocates like Elizabeth Benjamin, the other one, thinks is a good idea. And Citizen Action has come out against it as well. In addition, there's this issue of conflicts of interest, which I think is not expressly spelled out in the Senate bill, which makes advocates uncomfortable. Although, because they've set up a public authority to handle this, and they could have gone the nonprofit route, which they did not in the Senate bill, the Senator Hannan said to me, well, we have this public authorities reform bill that spells out issues about conflicts of interest, and because this is an authority, then it will be governed by that particular requirement. I mean, look, this is, if the state doesn't get its act together on this one, it's not going to be able to get federal cash, and that's just the bottom line.
Right.
And there's timelines for that.
And I guess my question, though, after our conversation with Elizabeth Benjamin last week, is does the governor care enough about this? Because this has not really been much in the news in New York State, and yet it seems a lot is at stake for the rules under which and the finances under which uninsured New Yorkers can take advantage of the new federal law. Is he going to get out and push for this, or is he just taking a progressive position, but then he's going to sit back?
Right. I don't know that he personally is going to be campaigning for this. However, there are members of his administration who have quite clearly made it and recognized the importance and made this a top priority issue, because if they hadn't, there wouldn't be bill language floating around. I mean, there is no specific bill that we've seen from the governor yet. I don't know from a PR standpoint that he'll embrace this, because I think it's too difficult for voters to understand. And I mean, I understand that it's a very progressive position that he's taking, but it's much more easy for voters and progressives to understand. The governor is for gay marriage. He's pushing gay marriage.
Right.
That's his way of trying to get the left back into the folds, than to push for something like an insurance exchange and the nitty-gritty of bill language on insurance exchanges. That's sort of not going to help him.
We're going to run out of time in about 2 minutes. I want to touch a couple of other things. Ken Lovett, are they going to have a sweeping deal this week on a property tax cap and more stabilized rent stabilization?
Well, that's going to be the question. It's all going to be whether they get a deal on rent stabilization. There's the possibility that the Senate passes a straight extender of rent stabilization, an extension of the current law, and then goes home like they did 8 years ago, forcing the Assembly to adopt it. If that happens, the Assembly will not do a property tax cap. If the Assembly and the governor want not only an extension of the law, but an expansion of the law to strengthen tenant protections, if it happens, you'll get both passed. If it doesn't, then you'll get the rent passed, as an extender, and you won't see the property tax cap.
All right, and still in the balance. That's maybe the big one. Or no, I shouldn't say the big one, because these are all big. But one of the big mysteries this week. And last thing, our next guest is union leader Greg Floyd on the governor's pension reform. This would include raising the retirement age to 65 for state and local workers. It's now 62 for most, 57 for teachers. It would base pensions on base pay, not a lot of overtime that people sometimes work in their final years just for pension purposes and some other things. Ken, is this an issue for this week, or is this something the governor floated the other day more for future consideration?
I think it was floated for future consideration. I think it was floated for contract negotiations. I haven't seen the legislature eager to do it this week. If something happens during contract negotiations, the legislature, much like with the health care bill, could always come back later in the year. Just because the legislative session is over, the regular session's over, doesn't mean they can't come back and do other things later in the year.
And let me ask each of you, is there anything else to keep an eye on? I mentioned bills pertaining to fracking and texting and ultimate fighting. Anything else that's going to come up and, you know, surprise a lot of people other than you this week when we're all talking about same-sex marriage and pensions and property taxes?
Yeah, all those things. I mean, the thing that sort of the hallmark of the end of session in Albany is that it's this crazy whirlwind and bills are just flying all over the place and things get passed in the middle of the night and they usually push. I mean, there's talk that they're going to push through towards the end of the week and then not come back on Monday, which is their last scheduled day. That would be the 20th. Mm-hmm. And so that indicates to me that we're going to be up pretty darn late on Friday night if that's the case. Usually the assembly goes later. So who knows? I mean, once the dust settles, you'll see things like, whoa, where did that come from? I wouldn't be
ugly.
Yeah,
it's called
the big ugly,
where everything gets thrown into a pot. One thing you will see,
and that's where the lobbyists really go to work, right?
Right.
It is.
Oh, yeah.
And one thing you may see that's going to be tied to rent control and property tax cap is a 421 tax abatement, which is a tax abatement for housing developers that expired in the city. And the Republicans really would like that. They also would love to do something on SUNY tuition. And those issues are still floating around.
Allowing it to go up, especially at the Big Four research universities.
Right.
All right.
8% at the Big Four, 5% at the others.
Yeah. We'll see what happens, and we'll keep talking about it this week. Ken Lovett, Daily News, Albany Bureau Chief, Liz Benjamin, host of Capital Tonight on the YNN Cable News Network, mostly upstate. Thank you both very, very much.
Thanks, Brian.
Brian Lehrer on WNYC, and we will talk to union leader Greg Floyd. He represents all kinds of city workers, for the most part, in the Teamsters Union. Did you know that some city workers are in the Teamsters? And we'll get his reactions to the governor's sweeping pension reform proposals. Stay with us.